Welcome to Nightlights. I'm David Brent Johnson. Billy Taylor was a jazz pianist, educator, broadcaster, composer of a civil rights anthem, and the man who dubbed jazz America's classical music. In the next hour, we'll hear that civil rights anthem, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, as well as some of Taylor's other recordings, plus excerpts from his work as a television music director and jazz journalist. It's the teacher, Billy Taylor, coming up on this edition of Nightlights.
Thank you.
pianist Billy Taylor in 1988 performing A Biento, which he originally wrote and recorded in the 1950s, and which he also used as the theme for the jazz show he hosted on New York City's black radio station WLIB in the 1960s. That version comes from Taylor's album, Billy Taylor Solo. Jazz writer Leonard Feather once said that it is almost indisputable that Billy Taylor is the world's foremost spokesman for jazz. Taylor was born on July 24, 1921 in Greenville, North Carolina, and grew up in Washington, D.C. In addition to his early musical training, Taylor wrote in his autobiography that, "My mother was a teacher and my grandfather a preacher, so perhaps I inherited from them a desire to discuss, to exhort, and to impart the music to people in ways that transcended performance alone." Taylor fell in love with jazz as a teenager in the 1930s, hearing big bands like Count Basie and Duke Ellington on radio broadcast, and seeing some of the music's early pioneers such as Jelly Roll Morton perform. He enrolled at Virginia State College in 1938 with the intention of pursuing a sociology degree, but he could not suppress his love of and drive to play music. When he told his father that he wanted to become a professional musician, his father withdrew financial support of Taylor's education, although Taylor would later learn that he continued to step in and quietly resolve any monetary shortfalls that befell his son. Eventually, Taylor moved to New York City and began exploring the vibrant jazz scene on 52nd Street. He struck up what would prove to be a long-running and influential friendship with the great pianist Art Tatum, and quickly landed a gig with saxophonist Ben Webster, who had left Duke Ellington's big band to start his own small group. Taylor also went on the road with jazz violinist Eddie South, who made one of the first recordings of a Taylor composition that was a tribute to a new acquaintance of Taylor's, the still obscure Thelonious Monk. Here's Mad Monk on Nightlights. Violinist Eddie South and pianist Billy Taylor in 1944 performing Mad Monk, Taylor's homage to the then-still little-known Thelonious Monk. In subsequent years, Taylor made his first recordings under his own name and continued to pay his dues as a young jazz pianist. He went to Europe with the Don Redman Orchestra and published a book on how to play bebop piano, one of the very first instructional guides to the then-new form of jazz. At the start of the 1950s, he became the house pianist at Birdland, the popular New York City jazz club, where he often backed some of the biggest stars in jazz. Here he is in 1951 performing the bebop tune Hot House at Birdland with Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie. Saxophonist Charlie Parker and trumpeter Dizzy Gillespie performing Hot House, a tune that became a bebop standard at Birdland in 1951, with Billy Taylor then serving as Birdland's house pianist. The standing Birdland gig gave a boost to Taylor's career, and throughout much of the 1950s, he had a working trio with Earl May on bass and Charlie Smith or Percy Bryce on drums. This 1952 recording of George and Ira Gershwin's They Can't Take That Away From Me was cited by Robert Dorschach in his book 88, The Giants of Jazz Piano, as an example of Taylor's exuberant early style, writing, "Taylor has a ball, popping truncated lines against the rhythm, gearing up to 16th notes, quoting slyly from the song Louise, and jumping through several different keys." Billy Taylor on Nightlights. Billy Taylor and They Can't Take That Away From Me, with Earl May on bass and Charlie Smith on drums, recorded in 1952. Taylor also worked and recorded on numerous occasions in this era with Latin jazz artists such as Machito and the percussionist Candido. Here's a brief excerpt of his tune, Mambo Inn. Also raising a son and daughter in the 1950s with his wife, Teddy, who he'd met and married in the mid-1940s. Throughout his life, he would frequently credit her with having helped make his career possible, especially in the early years when he sometimes struggled to find gigs and she provided the primary household income. Taylor would also become one of the first male jazz figures to call for greater gender equity in jazz. Here's a piece he wrote in honor of his wife, Theodora, on Nightlights. Billy Taylor performing his composition Theodora, tribute to his wife Teddy, to whom he remained married for the rest of his life, with Earl May on bass and Percy Bryce on drums, recorded in December of 1954. Though most of Taylor's 1950s recordings were made in this small group format, in 1957 he teamed up with Quincy Jones for a larger ensemble treatment of the songs from the popular musical My Fair Lady. Taylor had taken Jones under his wing when Quincy first arrived on the New York City scene, and Jones returned the favor with well-crafted arrangements for this project that gave a creative jazz twist to Alan J. Lerner and Frederick Lowe's songs. Here's Show Me on Nightlights. ¶¶ Pianist Billy Taylor performing Quincy Jones' arrangement of Show Me from the 1957 album My Fair Lady Loves Jazz. I'll have more of the music of Billy Taylor, as well as excerpts from some of his TV broadcasts, coming up in just a few moments. You can listen to many previous Nightlights programs on our website at wfiu.org/nightlights. Production support comes from Columbus Visitors Center, celebrating everywhere art and unexpected architecture in Columbus, Indiana. Modern architecture and design to explore 45 minutes south of Indianapolis. More at columbus.in.us. I'm David Brent Johnson, and you're listening to The Teacher, Billy Taylor, on Nightlights. I'm featuring the music of pianist Billy Taylor on this edition of Nightlights. Taylor, once described by writer Len Lyons as an able and diligent spokesman for jazz, whose sophisticated bebop-based piano style parallels the urbanity of his speech and manner. Such traits helped Taylor land a gig in 1958 as musical director of NBC's 13-episode educational series, The Subject is Jazz, hosted by writer and cultural critic Gilbert Seldes. Seldes was a buttoned-up interviewer who knew little about jazz, but who developed an appreciation for it over the course of the show's brief run. And it gave Taylor an opportunity to showcase the music for a wide television audience as he conversed with Seldes and gave musical demonstrations. Here they are talking about improvisation.
Well, the beginning of that, obviously, was T for Two by Vincent Humans. But after that, it was whatever Billy and his boys were improvising on it. Now, the natural, quite simple question is, what happened to the melody? I'm going to ask Billy to tell me this. What did you do, Billy, or what really happened?
Well, in any improvisation, what actually happens is that you take the melody and alter it in one form or another. You may do this melodically, as we did in that case. We added notes, or we changed the value of the musical notes like this. Sometimes we not only change the rhythmic values of the notes, but we add notes to it.
Now, you're trying to get rid of the melody as fast as you can?
Not get rid of it, just embellish it a bit and put our own personality to it.
Well, yeah. And what else do you do except this speeding up effect, which I get pretty quickly?
Well, not only speeding it up, we can do it slowly. For instance, if I change the harmony at the piano, instead of using Vincent Newman's harmony, which, if you know your alphabet, would be just B-flat to E-flat to A-flat, simply.
That's my alphabet.
Well, instead of doing that, I might start, say, G to C to F to B-flat to A, then to A-flat, like this.
That's your own harmony. The melody still I can follow.
Yes. Yeah. In some other cases, we might alter the rhythm. Might take, might do something like this.
But does that become a little bit more you than humans?
Well, perhaps, but that's one of the basic premises that jazz is founded on, the idea of it being a personal expression.
Billy Taylor talking with Gilbert Seldes, the host of the 1958 TV show The Subject is Jazz. Around this time, Taylor, who had written themes for a number of jazz DJs, became one himself, hosting a show on WLIB, a New York City radio station that had a strong following in the black community. Taylor remained on the air throughout much of the 1960s, broadcasting from the station's Harlem studio. One night, he had a lengthy phone conversation with a jazz fan who wanted to discuss Lester Young and other musicians. That caller was civil rights icon Malcolm X. Taylor also made a lasting contribution to the civil rights movement with a song he had initially written to give his daughter an example of how a spiritual sounded. We'll hear Taylor himself in full flight on this song later on in the program, but here's a snippet of the version that made it popular. Nina Simone and I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free on Nightlight.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear.
In the mid-1960s, Taylor also helped launch the Jazzmobile, an organization that drew on the talents of many notable musicians to bring the message of jazz and other artistic pursuits to schools, parks, festivals, and other community venues, often using a traveling stage to do so. That organization has continued into the 21st century. By the end of the 1960s, Taylor once again found himself on TV, serving as musical director for The David Frost Show. Taylor was the first black musician to land such a job on an ongoing series and hit it off well with the British broadcast personality Frost. They even recorded a Christmas album together. One memorable encounter during Taylor's time on the show, and another example of using his broadcast connections to showcase jazz artists to a wider audience, came in 1969 when Taylor and two of his musical elders and fellow pianists, Duke Ellington and Willie the Lion Smith, teamed up to perform the concert favorite Perdido, originally written by Ellington band trombonist Juan Tizol. As Frost began to introduce the segment, Ellington asked to announce the musicians himself, and then playfully seemed to forget Billy Taylor's name. A jestful payback, as Taylor noted many years later in his autobiography, for Taylor's having pushed him to engage with Gilbert Seldes in his stiff, pedantic interviewing style a decade earlier on the subject is jazz.
What are you going to play
May
for
I
us?
May I make the announcement?
Will you make the announcement totally yourself? You've got young Billy down there. And...
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. David Frost presents Willie the Lion Smith and Billy Taylor. And Juan Tizol Perdido. Thank you.
three-piano rendition of Perdido on the David Frost Show in 1969, featuring Duke Ellington, Willie the Lion Smith, and Billy Taylor. Though the David Frost Show went off the air in 1971, and Taylor's recording activities were few in ensuing years, he remained increasingly busy in his growing role as a jazz educator, advocate, and ambassador. He also went back to school, getting his doctorate in music education from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. In 1977, he became the host of a new NPR jazz radio series called Jazz Alive. Around the time that that series ended in the early 1980s, he became a contributing jazz journalist to the TV show CBS News Sunday Morning, where he won an Emmy for a segment about Quincy Jones. Here's Taylor on that show in 1983, introducing a rising young jazz star to program host Charles Kuralt and a television audience of millions.
Dr. Billy Taylor is here to talk about Wynton Marsalis, a young trumpet player I frankly never heard of. How did you hear about him?
Well, a friend of mine, Art Blakey, who is one of the grand masters of jazz, told me about this new trumpet player who was working with his band. And considering the fact that he had discovered people like some of the really great trumpet players, like Freddie Hubbard, for instance, and many others, even earlier than that, Clifford Brown and so forth. I said, well, hey, let me check this 18-year-old out. He was fabulous. He really was exciting and soulful. He had all of the qualities of a well-educated player. And so I didn't know what to make of him.
And he had all that at 18?
At 18. It was just remarkable. I couldn't figure, how could a kid be so mature, look so neat, and be so different from most of his peers? But he was.
What is it that makes him different?
Well, he's being groomed by a large record company and this is a big difference, because records are what put you out in the public eye and give you the exposure you need. But he's one of the few with talent. One of the things that makes him different is that he's well trained. He plays in the European tradition as well as the jazz tradition. And so he's made a classical record, he's made the European classical record, and he's made jazz records. So he is just as exciting in both.
Ah, let's do it again. Now let's start up from where you all are walking in the beginning, about right here.
At the age of 21, Wynton Marsalis has the peer acceptance and critical acclaim of which grand careers are made. As the trumpet player and leader of a youthful acoustical ensemble, which includes his older brother Branford on saxophone, he's burst ahead in the world of jazz by firmly planting his feet in its mainstream past.
An excerpt from Billy Taylor's 1983 profile of Wynton Marsalis for the CBS News Sunday Morning Show. Taylor also published an essay in 1986 that dubbed jazz America's classical music, a concept that helped solidify the hold that jazz was gaining in cultural institutions and collegiate schools of music. Though his educational and outreach activities took up much of his time, he continued to write music and perform. In 1984, the Atlanta Symphony commissioned him to compose an extended work in remembrance of Martin Luther King Jr. called Peaceful Warrior. Here's Taylor's 1994 recording of part of that work, His Name Was Martin, on Nightlights.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Taylor performing his composition, His Name Was Martin, derived from Peaceful Warrior, the extended work he wrote for the Atlanta Symphony in memory of Martin Luther King Jr. Stanley Turrentine heard on saxophone from Taylor's 1994 album, It's a Matter of Pride. That same year, Taylor became artistic director for jazz at the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts in Washington, D.C. Over the next 15 years, he continued to perform, teach, write, and carry the message of jazz to people all over the world. He also began work on his autobiography, which would eventually be published in 2013 as The Jazz Life of Dr. Billy Taylor. Billy Taylor died on December 28, 2010, at the age of 89. In an essay for Esquire in 1962, he wrote, "Great men don't only grow old, they grow." Taylor was referring to an insight he had gleaned as a teenager watching Jelly Roll Morton, one of jazz's founding musicians. Taylor learned and lived that lesson well. I'll end with a spirited performance of his best-known song, done in tandem with fellow pianist Marion McPartland on the debut episode of her own long-running NPR series, Piano Jazz, with Taylor as her first guest, and with some of Taylor's thoughts from his autobiography as he recalled his early years in jazz. He wrote, "The music made us forget that society said people should be separate, made us forget, temporarily at least, the threatening and divisive signs that labeled us and confined us to places that were either white only or colored only. Long before there were marches and sit-ins, protests and demonstrations, long before there were people yelling and screaming and shooting and killing each other because of their differences, there we were, united around our music, stomping at the Savoy, at the Apollo, at Small's Paradise, dancing and swaying to America's classical music, jazz. We were a democracy offering equal rights to all who could swing. That was the question, the only question, can you swing? Billy Taylor, Marion McPartland, and I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free on Nightlights. Thank you.
McPartland performing his civil rights anthem, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, on the very first episode of McPartland's NPR series, Piano Jazz. Thanks for tuning in this edition of Nightlights. Production support for Nightlights comes from Columbus Visitors Center, celebrating everywhere art and unexpected architecture in Columbus, Indiana. Modern architecture and design to explore 45 minutes south of Indianapolis. More at columbus.in.us. You can listen to many previous Nightlights programs on our website at wfiu.org/nightlights. I'm David Brent Johnson, wishing you good listening for the week ahead.